You know, your life is like a box of chocolates. No, it's not. You know, the one thing about all of us is that, you know, we're sojourners. You know, we are people that are not created or made for this fallen world. And so the reality of that is that you're on a journey. And that journey is going to end. That journey continues day by day. That journey will be unpleasant. We're made for tents in this world, not to build the kingdom as far as bricks and mortars. So the question that I have is for you is that what are you working on? What are you working for? What are you laboring for in this desert place? I was thinking about that a lot this week. Our sermon title is Our Daily Bread. And in Matthew chapter 6, verses 9 through 13, I have it on the back. I was thinking about Jesus. And what Jesus did was, is in chapter 6 of Matthew, Jesus in this chapter, it's a beautiful chapter because he takes the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and he multiplies them among 5,000 people. And he multiplies the bread and he puts it in 12 baskets. And then after this miracle takes place and everyone gets their fill, Jesus goes ahead, and the next scene is that he's walking on water. He's crossing on to the other side, and the disciples are in a boat. There's a storm, and they see Jesus walking on water. And then he crosses over to the other side. The people are chasing down Jesus. Their desire is to raise him up as a physical, literal king over Israel and to make him the king, to overthrow the Romans. And so Jesus comes over and then he teaches them how to pray. He teaches them how to pray. And this is what he says in verses 9 through 13 in Matthew chapter 6. He says, "Pray then in this way, Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven, as you have forgiven our debtors. And do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen." I was at a wedding several years back, and I was reading this, and the wedding, they asked for us to recite the Lord's Prayer in this. And so as I was reading this, I realized, every wedding is different. Every crowd is different. Sometimes you go to weddings and it's real fancy and it's all about the ceremony. Some other weddings, you know, it's like you have the wedding and there's like just kegs of beer everywhere else. It's about the party. And it's just a very strange thing. And I've done weddings throughout the years, and I'm always mindful of what is God doing in these people's lives. I don't assume that everyone that comes to a wedding, and I only do Christian weddings, but it's amazing to see the crowd. And this particular wedding, I started to recite the Lord's Prayer, and all of a sudden the congregation began to recite it. They begin to say it, and I just stopped and I let them finish. It was really a beautiful thing. But the one thing that really kind of broke my heart is by the time we got to "Let your will be done on earth as in heaven," I started thinking about the people that are saying these words. Evidently, they come from high church because they understand this. A lot of them were Catholics, and then they came to this verse 11, and it says, "Give us this day our daily bread. Deliver us from evil." And I started thinking about, do we really know what these words are saying? Have we learned them? Do we recite them? But the question I think is more important, do we actually live this out? It's a prayer that is to be acted, one that is asking that His will be done on earth as in heaven. Do we really desire that? Do we desire God's provision for this day? Only this day. This day is good enough for me. And that's a question. And of course, the whole forgiveness thing, we don't do too well at that in general. We do a pretty good job of asking God for forgiveness, but we have not forgiven our debtors. And then there's temptation and evil. I believe that the number one thing that's really a challenge for us in the church is that I think that we've lost a sense of desperation for the Lord. A desperation for daily bread, daily manna from Him. I believe it's in the desperate place that we inquire of the Lord. It's this desperate place that we can feel like, and many times this situation feels like it's a barren land. It's unfruitful. Death is around us. It's a place of discomfort in our lives. It's a place of desperation, and it also feels like a wilderness experience. But I also find that it's in these desperate places of our lives that we tend more often than not to seek God. 9/11 happens, everyone's praying. The Iraq War happens, all these soldiers are getting baptized before they enter into combat. When trouble hits your home front, you begin to pray, you begin to seek desperately. And usually those times only occur when the situation is beyond our ability to fix and to respond ourselves. When we're removed from our ability to fix the situation, we tend to be ones that ask and inquire of God. I like the picture that we got. It's these old, withered, dirty hands with this beautiful piece of bread. A beautiful little piece of bread. And it says, "Give us this day our daily bread." I think it's in these desperate times, these desperate places of our heart, that God answers, He moves, He provides, and He leads us. It's these desperate places where we're seeking and knocking and searching for Him. When we're crying out, and we're like a deer panting for water, as we, with all of our heart, with all of our mind, and all of our soul, we're seeking Him. I think sometimes the trials that we face can be a grace that God gives us. Because there's no better place than to be actively with all of your heart, all of your mind, all of your soul, searching and seeking with desperation Him. And I also believe that in the desperate place, it's a place where God continues to perfect and grow His people. Are you desperate? Would you characterize the season of life that you're in right now? Desperate for the Lord. Desperate for Jesus. So today what we're going to do is we're going to examine the bread of life, but we're also going to look at Israel's wilderness experience found in the books of Exodus and Numbers. We're going to see God's chosen people, Israel, in a place of desperation. And we're going to see them literally asking this question, "What is it that you're doing, God?" We'll see what God is doing in them despite their external circumstances. Before we look at Israel's desert experience, let's take a look real fast of how they got into the desert, okay? So Israel is in Egypt for 430 years. Jacob's 12 sons have now become 12 large tribes, and there's about 2 million people in Egypt. The Pharaoh, which does not know Joseph, who does not know Jacob, becomes threatened by their numerical growth. They're inside their country, and so he starts acting very harsh towards them. And of course, we know that he wants to reduce the population, and he begins to kill the firstborn. There's a Hebrew mother who tries to save her child, throws the child, this Hebrew baby, in a basket, sends it down, and the Pharaoh's daughter finds this baby, gives it an Egyptian name by the name of Moses. And when he arises or reaches adulthood, we understand that his heart begins to turn to his own people. He kills an Egyptian who's mistreating an Israelite in Exodus chapter 2. He flees to the Sinai Peninsula. He marries a daughter of a Midianite priest. God appears to him with a divine appearance in a burning bush and commissions him to go to the Pharaoh and release his people. Of course, we understand that Pharaoh hardens his heart, and eventually God decides, well, you know, you've hardened your heart enough. Now I am going to harden your heart for you. And 10 plagues come upon the Egyptian people. The final plague, which the angel of the Lord kills everything in Egypt as far as the firstborn, and we call that the Passover. And this convinces Pharaoh to let God's people go. This is followed by the greatest act of salvation recorded in the Old Testament, the crossing of the Red Sea. And there's a miraculous destruction of the most powerful army in the world by the God of Israel. And so now Israel enters a 40-year period of wandering in the desert. And they're led by a cloud of smoke during the day and a pillar of fire by night. And this symbolizes God's guiding and protective presence for his people. So let's turn our Bibles to Exodus chapter 16. My wife said I have 35 minutes because she's has all the kids downstairs, so we'll see what happens. We got 7 verses here, but really I'm not going to do an exegetical thing where we go all through all every verse, but what I want to do is I want to point out some things, and then we're going to go move to another verse, and I'll get my point across. But Exodus chapter 16, verses 1 through 7, it's on the board back here. It says, "Then they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month, after their departure from the land of Egypt." So they're 2 months into their journey. "The whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The sons of Israel said to them, 'Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the posts of pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill us, or to kill this whole assembly with hunger.'" That was choppy, sorry. Basically what he's saying is that, you know, in Egypt we had these pots of meat and we had bread to the fullness, and you've brought us out into this wilderness and you've killed, to kill our entire assembly. And this was the grumble, this was the complaint of God's people. Verse 4, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether or not they will walk in my instruction. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily.' So Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, 'At evening, you will know that the Lord has brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning, you will see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your grumblings against the Lord. And what are we that you grumble against us?'" So one thing that Moses does right off the get-go, in verse 7, you see that he rightly gives the accusation, the grumbling, to its correct direction. You're not really grumbling against Aaron and Moses. You're grumbling against the Lord, the one that delivered you from the Egyptians, the one that separated the Red Sea and destroyed the army. You ask for a sign now. And so the Lord is going to be gracious, and he's going to feed these 2 million people that after 2 months, their supply has run short. And they're looking in this desert area. It's looking grim. And what the Lord promises is a day's portion for that day. And he says this in verse 4. Why is he doing that? He says this, that I may test them, whether or not they will walk in my instruction. Verse 7 also acknowledges the fact that he hears us. He's one who hears. Only a day's supply. So here they are, they're running out of supplies. There's 2 million people to feed. They're in this desolate place. It's desperate circumstances. They begin to grumble against Moses, against Aaron. Now Moses, he always had a struggle. You know, Moses is a great picture of Christian leadership. Because often Christian leaders, they get all the grumbling, all the complaining. They get it all. And people that complain and grumble continually, they fail to realize that we are in this desert season and that God's best is not that we would camp out, build a village here in the Sinai. He's got a promised land. We're sojourners. We're not to be sitting there trying to make the kingdom on earth with brick and mortar. That we're passing through. We're aliens. And that our focus is not to be on the things of this world, but our focus is to be on the God who dwells in our midst. Question for you. Imagine what you would do if you were following Moses. Would you follow Moses, actually? Would you, like, literally get up? Egypt's all you've known. You know, the work that you have, the food, the pots of meat, the bread. And now we're going to go ahead and be delivered with this guy who's basically a murderer, not a very good pastoral resume. And, you know, he's scared to speak, does not want to lead. He stutters. He's got this guy, Aaron, you know, and he's going to go ahead and lead you out and let the largest military in the history of the world chase you down and hunt you out. And you're going to sojourn in the desert of Sinai for 40 years. With your spouse and your children, your grandparents, all of them. And after 2 months of this and your supplies run out, do you think that you would be concerned? Would you grumble? Would you question the leadership? I think many of us would. I think their response is a human response to the situation. A lot of times our grumbling come out of perceived human need. Have you ever experienced desperate circumstances? If you haven't, you will, I promise. The question really is how will you respond? So let's take a look at verses 14 through 15 real fast. Later on we read, and it's talking about this bread that rains down from heaven in verse 14. It says, when the layer of dew evaporated, behold, on the surface of the wilderness, there was a fine flake-like thing, fine as the frost on the ground. When the sons of Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, it is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. What is it? It's the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. He didn't give you pots of meat like you had in Egypt. He gave you this bread, a daily bread. This is His provision for this season of your life. And that word, when they actually said, they said, man who, which literally means, what is it? When they look at it, they say, what is it? And they named this bread manna. What is it? That's the literal translation of it. What is it? And it's a bread from heaven. It demonstrates the glory and the power of the Lord our God. And it's to remind them of their total dependence on God, not just one time, but every single day. day. This manna was daily bread. And so when I hear Jesus teaching those how to pray, give us this day our daily bread, automatically images of manna being provided to the people of God daily. And it's not like you're just sitting in your tent and you have a fridge and it just appears. God provides the bread daily for what you need, but you must get up, get out of the tent, and go collect the manna. The what is it? And sometimes you don't know what it is, but you got to collect the provision that God has for your life. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 3 through 4. He speaks a little bit more to the Israelites about this manna, this experience, this provision. It says in verse 3, it says, "He humbled you and he let you be hungry." Their lack, God allowed that to happen so they could be hungry and humble. Their hunger was a form of humility, to bring them to humility, to bring them to a desperate place. So he humbled you and let you be hungry and fed you with manna, which you do not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live on bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. So here's this supernatural provision of manna. And it's a humiliating thing where it's like, you know, I cannot rely on my own strength. I got to be humbled. And I come to the Lord with humility for daily provision. Daily provision. And that provision is not just for physical needs. It's not about the desert. It's not even about the journey. It's about what God wants to do in you. It's this humbling experience where you rely on the Lord your God for everything, despite what you have or what you don't have, despite the desert experience, the heat of the day, the trials of the moment. It's not about the trials. It's not about the heat. It's not about the desert. He's with you. He's providing your daily bread. It's his way to draw you close. He's building your faith through the trial. So they were starving and God fed them. When they were desperate in need, God responded. God showed himself as the one who was with them in the desert place, the God who is their provider. And according to Numbers chapter 11, verses 4 through 6, the people grew tired of this manna, and they resumed their grumbling, asking for a richer food that they could eat in Egypt. I think sometimes whenever we look at our faith walk in God, it's like we love the experiences when he parts the waters. We love those supernatural experiences where he parts the waters. And even the Israelites, as they cross through the waters, they set up a memorial to remember of the great supernatural work that God did in that day, in that moment. But sometimes the daily provision of God can be mundane. It can be mundane, and you can begin to get complacent, or you can grow weary of the daily provision that God has for you. Life is not supposed to be a series of Exodus experiences. God wants us to rest in his presence daily, and that is a very supernatural thing for the believer to do. Where the ordinary is sacred because he is with us, the ordinary becomes sacred. So Numbers chapter 11, verses 4 through 6. The rabble who were among them had greedy desires. We always want more. Our flesh, we always want more. It's never enough. Why is it never enough? Because our desires will never be fully realized or fulfilled in this world. That's why those who have so much, millionaires have so much, it's not going to satisfy their greedy desires. The things of this world will never satisfy you, ever. You're just a sojourner. The rabble who were among them had greedy desires, and also the sons of Israel wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat?" We remember the fish which we used to eat in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna. You know, in slavery, they were in Egypt in slavery. And they're looking back here in this free place, this place where God is providing in a supernatural way. And they're wondering for 40 years. And they're not just wondering. As God moves, they follow. And Moses is trying to keep the people, their eyes focused on the Lord. But over and over and over again, their desires are for something else. It's a greedy desire, is what verse 4 says. And they look back at their captivity. They look back at the good old slavery days. And they say, at least there we had meat. And it says, it's a shame. It says that now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna. Do you ever look at the provisions of God and get discontent with that? Where you just need more? You need to be fulfilled some more in this desert place? And maybe if I just slip back into Egypt, back into my old ways, back into that old life, then maybe I'll get some kind of fulfillment? Forgetting there was a reason why they left Egypt in the first place? There's something else that drove them out? Their appetite for the things of God, for the provision of God, is gone. It's a challenge for us in the West because we have so much. We have so much. You get sick, you know what? You got to go to the doctors. You know, and even our level of poverty in this country does not compare to the world's. I don't consider myself a wealthy man at all, but I know that the bed I sleep in is greater than King David's. The car that I drive when it starts, and trying to get that thing going on, is better than any chariot that David had. We got it pretty good. But it's not enough in this society. We desire, we're greedy, we want more. And the issue is it seeps into the church. And we can't discern our personal greedy desires versus what God has provided. We look at manna and we say, we want meat. We're never content. We're never satisfied for the good thing that God has given us. And we wonder, why am I toiling with this? Why is my life, woe is me? This is all I have. And the enemy, he wants you to fight and to struggle and to desire something greater, something more in this world. You know, God has called you to be a sojourner in this world. Don't build a city. It's tents right now. The kingdom is being built in you. They wanted what they had in their slavery in Egypt, and they lost their appetite for the Lord's supernatural provision daily. I think it's great imagery for the Christian life. It really is. You know, Egyptian slavery. It's this idea of slavery to sin before we know Christ. This Exodus is this salvation experience where we cross through the waters of from this idea of a slave to sin to being saved in Christ. But then we have this Exodus experience where we're in the world but not of it, that we're called to another land, this land flowing with milk and honey. But for 40 years, for a long time, we're going to be stuck in this wilderness experience as sojourners. And so we're in this desert experience, and I really believe that every single one of us are in a desert experience. Sometimes we don't know, but every single one of us are in a desert experience. Every single one of us feels the effect of a fallen world. And sometimes, you know, you're hanging out and you're feeling like, well, life isn't that rough, or it's not that, you know what, it's a mirage. Okay, you're in the desert, it's a mirage. But one day you'll know. One day, the trials of this life will become greater than you will be able to handle without the Lord. But with Him, it's possible. So what is God doing with us in this barren land? What is He doing with us? I often look at this world as a sinking ship that God is not trying to recover. And here we are in this boat as it's sinking, and we're trying to find ways to fix it and plug the holes and do all this stuff. And as we do that, and as we struggle and work for this boat that we're never meant to live in, we try to find all kinds of ways to salvage it. And it's funny, because the more we do that, the worse it gets. The world we live in is becoming bizarre. Like, you don't even have to be a Christian to think, this is crazy. This is beyond worldviews of a Christian worldview and a worldly worldview. It's just weird and wrong. So what is God doing with us in this barren place? What is He doing or wants to do in your life in this barren place? What's the good, what is it that God is doing? And just like that word manna, what is it? As we wait for this promise. So let's look at what God was doing in Israel for these 40 years. I know one thing, that as Israel walked into this land, this barren place for 40 years, you know, Israel walks in as slaves, but 40 years later, they leave a kingdom. They walk in as slaves, and they leave that barren land, and they go enter into the land, the promised land, flowing with milk and honey, and they have the ability to overtake 10 kingdoms in the land of Canaan. He builds a military. In the desert place, Moses established 7 elders. He builds a government in the desert place. Before they left Egypt, they didn't have a form of worship to Yahweh. That it was heightened as they built the tabernacle. They built the priesthood. The 12 tribes gathered around that. They had a sacrificial system put in place. As you read Leviticus and you doze off, God's doing something miraculous. A way to approach Him in the desert place. He set them apart in the desert place. He took them out of the most cultivated culture, Egypt, and takes them into this desert place, and He sets them apart. The word to be set apart is holiness. He is holy. He gives them the law in the desert place. He organizes the tribes. And so, yes, through the tabernacle, the priests, the system of worship, He establishes a way that His chosen people could approach Him. So in the desert place, God took slaves and he built a nation. He was preparing them for the promised land. The reality of their unpleasant experience was that as these people, these 2 million people, entered into the desert, they were not prepared to take over the land that God had promised them. They weren't ready for it. It's in those desert places of your life that God is building you up into the person that he's created you to be. It's a sanctifying work. It's a building up process. So when you look at your life and you look at the places of personal desperation, these barren areas of your life that surround you, and you ask, what is it? It's not about what is it. It's God's provision for your life. And he's going to build you up. So many times we experience conflict or discomfort. So many times when we find ourselves in desperate places, so many times we ask ourselves, why, God? And really the question we need to ask is, Lord, what? What are you building in me through this? I know that you're sovereign. I know that your love abounds. I know that your plans for me are good. I don't need to ask what. I need to ask why and how. How can I submit more to your purpose and your plan? How can I be faithful to this process, no matter how uncomfortable it is? How can I grow in greater faith through this circumstance in this desert place? How can I stop focusing on the death that's around me and start focusing on the manna, the life that you've given me? What is it that God has given you? What is it that he gives you to let you know that he is with you, that he is your provider, that he is guiding you, and that he has and will continue to provide for your daily need? Many times we don't even ask. Israel, they just went straight to grumbling. They're in their tents, and they're tired of the manna. They don't ask. They don't recognize the fact that there's a provision. They step over it, and they're like, I'm going back to Egypt. Discontent, unthankful, and they don't see that the miracle is amazing. It's sweet bread from heaven. I think of what are those things called? Elephant ears? You know? It's sweet bread from heaven. National Donut Day last week. Sweet bread from heaven. But it's a daily bread that's given. It becomes mundane. I wonder, do we really need a catastrophe in our house, in our lives, to really seek the Lord our God with all our heart, our mind, and our soul? I think sometimes God gives us those as a grace, because you know what? It's not about the desert. It's about you. It's about you and him. That's the story. That's the whole story of this whole thing. It's not about the earth and the mortar, the kingdom that you're building in this desert place. It's not about your job or about the trial. It's not about any of that, because none of those things are too big for God. And that doesn't mean that he's going to make paradise in the desert for you. That's not his plan. It's not his plan. His plan for you as an individual, no matter what you experience in this world, to draw closer and closer in him. To love the Lord your God with all your heart and your mind and your soul. To be able to rest in him in this desert place. You know, I think one of the challenges with the church in the West is that we do not have a culture of desperation. We are so badly affected by the desert and the conditions and the personal toil and trauma that happens in our life that we don't look at the provision that God has given us and we step over it, and so therefore it doesn't impact our life. He's unable to get our ear to guide us. You know, as I look at Jesus, it's very interesting in this, in John chapter 6. John chapter 6, you know, we have these five loaves and these two fish that are multiplied. And I think of the manna that God provided, this bread, these loaves that were multiplied for his people. And Jesus fed 5,000 people. And directly after that in John chapter 6, what happens is that we see that Jesus now crosses over to the other side and he's walking on water. As Moses split the water, Jesus walks on the water. And then we have John chapter 6 verses 30 through 35, and this is what it says. So they said to him, these are the crowds, the people, what then do you do for a sign? We're always looking for a sign. His presence, his continual provision. We're always looking for a sign. Lord, if you would do this, I'll do this. We're always bartering with him. And he's, I give you manna every day. So they said to him, what then do you do for a sign so that we may see and believe you? The only way they're going to believe is with a sign. If you do this, what work do you perform? Verse 31, our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness. As it is written, he gave them bread out of heaven to eat. Jesus then said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread out of heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread out of heaven. For the bread of God is that which comes down out of heaven and gives life to the world. Then they said to him, Lord, always give us this bread. Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will no longer hunger, and he who believes in me will never thirst. The events that took place in the wilderness experience are just a foreshadow of the true bread, the true manna that comes down from heaven, Jesus Christ. In this world, you are surrounded. You are sojourners. The boat will sink. It will sink. Jesus is the author and the perfecter of our faith, and he does that in the desert place. He is the door to the promised land. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And no man will come to the Father except through him. He says, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will not hunger. And he who believes in me will never thirst. What are you hungry for? What are you bartering with the Lord for? Is he just plainly good enough? Do you trust in the manna that God has given you for the day? It's not just the supernatural experiences, the crossing of the Red Sea. It's the day in, the day out. Lord, give us this day our daily bread. And I think of the scripture that says, I will rejoice because today is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. I think so many times we get discontent with life. We get overwhelmed by the desert place, and we never focus on the manna that God has provided, Jesus Christ. His Spirit is here today. His Spirit is with you as you go on your way day in and day out. He is sufficient to provide for you, to sustain you, to guide you, to strengthen you. And so many times we're like, these foolish people in the desert making mud huts. One day, these were people that lived in tents in the desert place. One day, a nation would be established. The city of David would be built up. And Jesus says, my Father has many rooms in his house. He's preparing one for you. But don't camp out in the desert. Follow him. Rely on him. Focus on him. Do not build your kingdom on earth. What are you working for? What are you toiling for? What has you disrupted, bothered, uncomfortable? What are the challenges of your life? Where are the areas in your life that you're unsatisfied? So what is it? It's Jesus Christ. He is our manna. His Spirit descended down from heaven on the day of Pentecost. And he's here. So many times our flesh, we need to see it. We need to smell it. We need to taste it. We need to possess it. But that is not God's purpose. He wants to fill you. He wants to possess you. He wants to walk with you. He's more concerned about what he's building in the desert. He's preparing you. He's strengthening you. He's guiding you. It's daily bread. It's daily bread. You know, this world, I look at it as a giant test. He even says in Exodus chapter 16, verse 4, he says that they were to gather the day's portion every day that I may test them whether or not they will walk in my instruction. That's what it's about. That's what it's about. It's not about the issues. It's not about, one day. It's about today. Are you going to follow the instruction of the Lord? Are you going to draw close to him? Is he going to be your strength? Is he going to be good enough? Is his presence going to satisfy you? And Jesus Christ is our manna. Let's never lose our appetite for the day in, day out manna. It's a supernatural provision by God. So many times our life, we think it's defined by these huge experiences, these great highs and lows, these pinnacles and these valleys. But God is a God of the day. Every single day of abiding and living in him. And I'd say that the person that you're going to be in the future is the sum total of these days. He's creating and he's building you up into Christ likeness. And he's going to use you. And he's going to move you. And he's going to allow you to cross over. And he's going to establish a kingdom. And we're all just living bricks, living stones of that kingdom. You know, this world has got us all frazzled and distraught. Jesus is not distraught or frazzled. He's looking at all these earthen vessels and he's like, the work that's being done, it's not about Donald Trump. It's not about nuclear warheads. It's not about people that are confused. It's not about any of this stuff. It's about you. And I'm building you up into living stones. Stop looking at the external and look at the God that's before you and building you up internally. So I think we need a desperation. I think we need a worldview in which we can look at this world and our experiences and walk it out in a faith that exudes Christ, a faith that points the world to something greater. A land that we do not know of yet, something to come.